Hello, my name is Chip Lang, and you are listening to Total EM. Spider bites, we hear about them all the time, but are they actually the complaint that the patient has? Is it really a staph infection or an abscess or, you know, just in general, MRSA or MRSA, as some people like to refer to it? This is the tricky part because a lot of people come in complaining of spider bites, but do they really have it? A few people do. And because of the potential complications, including in some cases, fatal systemic illnesses, we need to really know, is this actually what's going on? We need to be able to identify that correctly. In North America, brown recluse bites, they're uncommon, but they definitely can happen. And envenomation can cause, in some cases, death, even in the United States. More commonly, we see this in South America. A lot of the points are the same, and we're going to talk about this in kind of the general aspect. Now, a lot of times, we need to be able to properly identify the spider. Maybe not ourselves in the clinical setting, because usually people aren't bringing in spiders. They usually kill them well beforehand, although sometimes people do bring animals in that have bit them. I've seen that plenty of times. But usually with spiders, we don't see that, because oftentimes they're complaining of things later on. Especially in most cases, patients aren't seeing or feeling anything bite them. And I think that's a big thing when we talk about spider bites, because it's really hard to truly confirm it unless you either see it or feel its bite, or preferably both. When spiders do bite, they, especially the brown recluse types, it tends to be pretty painful. The actual spider bite in brown recluses is known to have a very sharp stinging sensation, and it happens in a way that leads to a very irritating bite later on. That's if, again, if it's the classic envenomation. The spiders themselves, they'll have, you know, the usual eight legs, but they'll have six eyes instead of the usual eight eyes. And this will be organized in three pairs. They're about 2 to 3 centimeters in length, leg to leg. And when they do bite, it's pretty rare. They usually only do it when they are alarmed because they like to be reclusive. They like to stay away from things. Usually this is during dressing or when we are sleeping and the spider becomes trapped in the clothing or bed linens and decides to bite at that time. Certain times they can cause a burning and very itchy sensation, usually within 2 to 6 hours. And over time, the wound typically develops into this erythematous halo that we'll see with this hemorrhagic vesicle in the center. We tend to sometimes see vesicles with bites, and these usually can help us indicate that this truly was some form of an insect bite. But again, we're talking about a little bit of a hemorrhagic thing. We'll show this in the pictures in the show notes as well. Right around day 3 or 4, that hemorrhagic vesicle starts to become necrotic and an eschar forms. And this is something that sometimes, again, can be a little hard to differentiate, but usually we're not seeing a lot of skin breakdown with abscesses or staph infections unless it's pretty serious. But that delay in that timing can be kind of helpful. And then about after 2 to 5 weeks, the eschar sloughs, there's an ulcer, and often it heals by secondary intention. In some extreme cases, it may even require skin grafting. Often when we do actually have these bites, it tends to be more common that the systemic symptoms that we see are in children. In fact, most cases I've seen that it has been with kids, and there have been a few adults, but usually not very common. Usually as early as 24 hours after envenomation, you may have symptoms. Again, this makes it difficult to sometimes differentiate from abscesses. But these symptoms tend to be fever, arthralgias, nausea, vomiting, diarrhea, rashes, body aches, headaches, those types of things. When we start seeing lab changes like thrombocytopenia or signs of DIC, which is disseminated intravascular coagulopathy, or even proteinuria or renal failure, these are all things that we have to watch for as well. How can we really best differentiate this? Again, the classic thing we're looking for is that erythematous halo with a central hemorrhagic vesicle that develops within a couple of days, because that we're not going to see as much. And it can be hard, again, because people may come with this with days later, but usually the pain's enough. I've noticed with most of them that if they really are envenomations where there's going to be complications, they're going to come early. What I have really liked, and I didn't know this until after I read the paper and started doing the show notes for this and gathering everything together. One of our local physicians, Dr. Stecker, is a dermatologist and actually wrote this cool little mnemonic called Not Recluse. And this is neat because it helps us differentiate lookalike conditions. And so I want to go through that because I believe that Not Recluse little mnemonic there is going to help us better differentiate what is a brown recluse bite, or more likely to be a brown recluse bite, versus something else like an abscess. And so the first part is the N is numerous. So brown recluse bites, they tend to be a single bite. The occurrence, it usually happens when things are disturbed. It tends to be whenever, you know, people are cleaning out things or, again, putting on clothes, or in the middle of the night when they're kicking around in the sheets. When we don't have that type of history, though, again, it tends to be less likely. And also, if you don't see or feel the bite, that tends to be helpful, too. The T is for timing. So bites outside of that April to October time frame, at least in the United States, where we tend to have the busiest time, the warmest weather, stuff like that, that spiders tend to be out more, that's usually when we're going to see the bites. Outside of that time frame, tends to be unlikely for it to be a recluse bite. The R is for the red center. Usually the center of the brown recluse bite is white, purple, or black. So a red center, not as helpful. Again, we talked about the hemorrhagic lesions. Worth looking at the difference there. Another big thing is the elevated appearance. So brown recluse bites are often flat, or they're even actually depressed into the skin. So if you see something raised, elevated, think more of an abscess or some other things that can go with it. The C is for chronic. Most bites are going to heal within 3 months. So if someone's coming in with a chronic ulcer or lesion, again, unlikely. Now, we did talk about how that skin sloughs up and stuff like that happens, but usually if it's that bad, we're going to have attention sought out before that point. The L is for large bites. So at its largest, this can usually involve 10 centimeters in size. If you're getting larger ulcerated lesions, there are other things that can come up, such as pyoderma gangliosum. And we need to really think about, okay, big bites, could be cellulitis, could be other things going on. Let's not always jump to this is a spider bite. The U is for ulcerating too early. It takes a long time. Usually ulceration happens after 7 to 14 days. It's somewhere in that time frame or later. If it's happening within the first couple of days and people are coming in saying they've got a spider bite, it's, again, more likely to be something else. The S is swollen. Usually bites don't lead to edema. Sometimes they can on the neck and face, and sometimes it may happen on the feet as well. But anywhere else, if you see swelling with it, again, less likely for it to be a brown recluse bite. And then E, for the not recluse, the E part is exudative. So these bites are not purulent. They should not have stuff leaking out of them. A small vesicle is all that's really seen, and then it may leak a little bit of fluid, and that's about it. If it's leaking, if it has exudative, it's purulent, no, it is probably not a brown recluse bite once again. So the differential, because I think it's worth kind of mentioning this briefly, I'm not going to go through all the different things because there can be so many things that do this. The big one, again, is that community-acquired MRSA, the abscesses, the staph infections, stuff like that. When people start talking about a spider bite, often it is actually community-acquired MRSA. Now, other things that are envenomous can do this as well. Seeing centipedes, certain caterpillars can do this. I've even seen other things that can have a stinging type reaction that we see as stinging insects. So be careful about that as well. Lyme disease, that whole halo appearance can sometimes be confusing when we're talking about, again, stinging type creatures. Don't forget about wasps or honeybees or those types of things. You know, sometimes it can be weird infectious pathology otherwise. So it can be syphilis. You know, necrotizing fasciitis is not very common, but it is something that it may appear that way and make it a little bit confusing because sometimes a bad infection can lead to that, or that pyoderma gangliosum like we were talking about. Also, we don't always think about other things like factitial ulcers or diabetic ulcers. And we can also see other things that happen like complications with Coumadin or warfarin, and then vasculitis can also occur. And sometimes burns are responsible for this too. Again, we blame spiders a lot for being the causes of these weird things that show up. But realistically, we need to expect a lot of different other possible causes first. And we have to also keep in mind that sometimes we're the one who causes things like it. So if someone's been on certain antibiotics recently or other medications, Stevens-Johnson syndrome or toxic epidural necrolysis, that's TIN, as some people know it, or SJS and TIN, those types of things can happen too. Unfortunately, there's no really good test to try and figure out whether or not this was actually a brown recluse bite. A lot of it is based on time and looking at things over time and seeing how this looks and how it manifests and how it changes and everything else. If you're worried about true systemic involvement, though, you can do some tests like we're talking about, looking for DIC and renal failure and those types of things as well. Also, keep in mind that rhabdomyolysis can occur. When it comes to how to manage these patients, unfortunately, there's no great answer. A lot of patients come to me when they think they have a spider bite and they actually have what appears to be an infected wound of some kind, whether it's an abscess or whatever else. They ask, well, what are we going to do about my spider bite? And I explain that we want to use antibiotics, not because it's a spider bite, because it's an infection. When I explain this, that really the evidence shows there's no great medication, at least, that helps with this. It's about other supportive measures. It's actually in many ways easier to treat an infection than it is these bites, because these bites just become awful things sometimes. And sometimes patients have to be admitted because of the necrotic lesions or they have systemic toxicity like we're talking about. So when we think about our treatment, we need to think about it in three ways. So the first aid type stuff, the thing that people can do at home, you know, clean the wound, irrigate it, use cold compresses for the first few days. Sometimes elevating it can be helpful. Pain medications, antihistamines, all those things can be done at home. If patients were to be admitted into the hospital or come to the hospital for treatment, you know, tetanus prophylaxis is not a bad idea. Wound irrigation, again, is a good idea, along with the cold compresses, the elevation, the mobilization, like we talked about before. And then sometimes they will need local debridement for clearing of the necrotic tissue to allow for better healing. And again, this may be sometimes when patients may need to be admitted to the hospital for further management. Or sometimes when people mess with this and they don't get the proper care, this could lead to infection in that case. But as far as like other treatments, so early excision is not a good idea. There's been some anecdotal evidence about topical nitroglycerin, but again, no real benefit. There has also been talked about the injection of steroids, which again show no benefit, or systemic steroids, which may be effective when you're dealing with hemolysis, but there's no real benefit for a local lesion. Antibiotics, unless there is an infection going on, you're suspecting one, really isn't the way to go. I tried this once before in a patient. I used Dapsone. It really was a big ordeal. And in the end, we didn't use it. I had prescribed it, but with inconclusive data and it not being FDA approved, we decided to forgo it in the end. And also, you had to watch about G6PD deficiency, because all those types of things are factors when it comes to using this medication. So long story short, we decided not to use it because we didn't have good enough information. It wasn't easy enough to obtain. Hyperbaric oxygen, it's been used, but it may be only good if it's really around and it probably doesn't actually have great evidence. And then finally, there's antivenom, which is available in South America. There's very limited data about it, but it's not available in the United States. So in all, when I'm talking about this, I like to think about many things can mimic brown recluse bites. And sometimes even other spiders can mimic it. Scorpions can also do this as well. There's all sorts of things that can do it. But the top thing that we need to keep about in our differential is something infectious, particularly MRSA, because we see that so much. In fact, and I'll try and find the study for this, but I remember reading before about one of the best predictors for MRSA was when a patient came in complaining of a spider bite, because it really is rarely a spider bite. When we ask people about what's going on, we want to ask them, did you see or feel a spider bite? We want to inspect the actual wound and again, consider the not recluse mnemonic, because that can be helpful in differentiating what is and what isn't a brown recluse bite. And then we need to keep in mind that we need to look for signs of infection, even if we do believe it's a recluse bite, because this can happen, and to treat that appropriately. But otherwise, we need to prepare people that usually there's not much we can do, at least initially, and talk about the basic first aid stuff for the first few days, and try and ensure good follow-up, whether that's with the ED or with primary care, preferably primary care, because usually there's not much you're going to be able to keep them for unless they're showing signs of systemic toxicity. As one final point, not directly related to this post, but in general, I just want to give a friendly reminder. And if you already know about this, then hey, you can probably skip this part. And that's why I throw it in at the end. But unfortunately, sometimes when we make posts, especially with the very popular last post, the Paramedic 2 trial, people loved it and they wanted to talk about things. But the problem was they didn't read the paper and or they didn't bother reading the post that we had. They just wanted to interject their opinions. And it's frustrating because a lot of that we already covered in the post itself, and we could have gone so much further in the conversation. So please, before you decide to comment on something, especially if you're going to give a negative comment, check out the actual work first. And we've talked about this before on how you debate and stuff like that. Fortunately, most people were very positive, but sometimes it gets annoying when we have to reiterate things that we already talked about in the post. So sometimes if you do make a post to me and I reply, please know that if I'm saying something like that, I just really want to make sure you understand what we're talking about, so we're not rehashing out something that's already been in the original blog post or podcast itself. But until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.